Okay, just a few introductions as the sheets are going around. It's a very famous statement in the Gemara that Kol she'einoi baki b'tiv gittin v'kiddushin lo yehi la'isek imayim. There's an interesting discussion in the poskim and the Mefarshim on the Gemara as to how, to what extent does that limit people who haven't finished the Yodin Kola from becoming Masad Rikdushin or fillers out of Tzuvis and so on and so forth. And the impression I got from speaking to a few Rabbanim, leaving aside the original Makoros, the Tazanit, the Marsha, etc., is obviously before you engage in any kind of a sphere of halacha, whatever it is, you have to know what you're doing. So you don't necessarily have to know about Kiddushei Orev and Eved Kenani in order to be Masada Kiddushin, but you do have to spend a considerable amount of time learning the halachas, knowing a little bit of Shemesh Chachamim and consulting with Rabbanim before you actually go out there and engage in the live thing. The same, of course, is true for Ksuvis. There are ample pitfalls that might go wrong if you really don't know what you're doing. Even with all the call-by-number charts that we'll be discussing today. So it's kedai to, as Asida Kiddushin is somewhat on the horizon for Shul Rabbanim, so you should become more and more attuned to what's going on at a chuppah. Read through Ksuva, see how the Rav filled it out. If you have any questions, you could ask him, etc. This is the way you really learn halacha, by hands-on experience. I also wanted to show you the various forum that some of which, a subset of which I should say, of our Bleich's recommended forum, in terms of the Kitzurim having to do with Inyanei Seder Kiddushin and Ksuva specifically, the Sefer Nisuim Kol Chasam, which I've used extensively both in my own learning and also preparing for these Chaburis, two-volume work by Rabbi Adler, very, very comprehensive. Some people think a little too comprehensive, you know, when you have a work that quotes all the sheets, it's, you know, so what do I do? So, but it's a very, very useful work, and it goes from A to Z, from when you're supposed to get married and how much you have to pay the shatkin, all the way to complicated questions of marriages of chasanim and kalas with various halachic histories. And at the very end of the Sefer, he has Kitzur Dinim, step by step, for Seder Kiddushin. So it's a very, very useful tool to be Mishane in the Halachas after you've seen the at least some of the original Makoros inside. There's also a Sefer called Ksuva Kilchasa by Rav Eliezer Stern, who's vying with Rav Tzvi Cohen for how many Sforim they could put out. But Baruch Hashem, he's published quite a lot, Posek of note, from what I could tell, in Eretz Yisrael. The Nisuim Kol Chasam has a significant perek on Ksuva as well, pretty comprehensive. So both of the works are very, very useful. The Ksuva Kol Chasam also in the back, in the expanded version that just came out recently, has a list of more modern names, especially Yiddish spellings, or something's a little tricky, so he has a list of the names. There's also a lot of essays for Iyun topics on Inyanei Ksuva, which is, of course, a large overlap with Inyanei Shtar. Just not directly related to our topic today, but there's also a little volume you get a hold of called Ol Yishurim, which is not about Seder Kiddushin, but it's good to have on the Rav shelf because it has a lot about Sheva Brachas and a lot of pesukim from Moshe Feinstein that don't appear elsewhere.
Ohal
Yishurim. Yeah, it also has, we might have quoted before, it has on Hagala and Tvilas Kalim and so on and so forth. Okay. What we're going to do in the this particular chabura is twofold. We're going to just go through some of the basics of how to fill out a ksuva. A lot of it, at least the first part, has to do with just the Hebrew grammar. But to become accustomed to how, then the particulars of how to fill out the date and a little more about filling out the makom. Roy Bleich discussed that the past chabura was
it's not done yet.
Not done yet, so I'll continue with some of the more out of the ordinary situations that do come up. A little more about the details of filling out the shame of the chasan and kala, even in a normal case. Roy Bleich discussed cases where they don't have a Hebrew name, so that becomes more complicated in terms of exactly how to spell the name. And mitoch advarim, a little bit of analysis of the various parts of the ksuva, meaning not the text, but what the woman's getting out of this deal. The Iker Ksuva, the Tsef Ksuva, the Dunya, which of course are all mentioned here. That's the first part of the shiur. The second part of the shiur, hopefully we'll have time, I want to discuss a little bit. It basically launches us into a very unknown topic, tucked away at the end of Baba Basra, which hardly anybody learns, including myself, except for preparing for this, and Shulchan Aruch Chosh Mishpat, in terms of the laws of shtaris and signing of shtaris and what rules they have to keep in mind. And all the more so nowadays when many people are printing suvis by computer and sometimes hiring artists to make suvis, so you have to know what's a kosher suv, what isn't. You know, a rav doesn't want it to know. No good. No artistry. Go to Eichler's and get a form. So sometimes you have to be able to know what the halachos are in order to know what's good, what isn't. Right, Bleich mentioned some of it. I wanted to go through some of the extra details as well. Okay, so that said, let's begin from the very beginning. The ksuva begins with a date. All things being equal, Rabbi Bleich, Beth Hashem, will discuss the complicated cases, but all things being equal, the date is the date that the Edim are signing the ksuva. It's oftentimes the date that you're filling in the ksuva, and that is identical with the date of the Kiddushin / Nisuin. That is the easiest case. Oftentimes you have situations that I'm going to leave for Rabbi Bleich to discuss where it's not so easy to arrange all those dates to coincide, because sometimes the chuppah is going to occur right after Shkia, right after Tzeis Kuchavim, and the Chasen's Tish, when you're signing the ksuva, or that you want to sign, it very well might be taking the place the day before. Which date do you write? Do you write the day of the signing? Do you post-date it to the date of the chuppah? This will be discussed, and I'm not going to address that now, because it will be discussed in the chaburas. But in the classic case, you're writing the date of the wedding / signing. Now, although there is a minority position otherwise, namely Tosfos and Gittin Daf Pei, but the Psak in Shulchan Aruch is that you need not be makbid on the writing of the ksuva, the date of the writing or the filling in, that should also correspond. And of course that would have an afkamina for a nervous rabbi, and even if it's not a nervous rabbi, it oftentimes is a good idea anyway, to fill out the ksuva in advance, that you come prepackaged to the wedding, either because it's done by an uman beforehand, an artist is filling it in, or because you're nervous and you don't want to have to fill it out under the flash of the camera bulbs. So that is acceptable, lahalacha. You certainly could fill in, let's say today, I don't remember the exact day, whatever, let's say Chof Gimel Sivan, something like that. I don't think I'm too far off. So let's say the wedding's going to take place Chof Vav Sivan. So I could put in the date Chof Vav Sivan on Tav Gimel in my library. But it's not today's date. But you're not signing it today. The ksuva is not being effective on that date. So it's not really considered a shtar mucher in that case. I'm not post dating it because I'm writing the date when it's going to be relevant. Again, there were those who were machmer in that, but that's not the accepted psak and Shulchan Aruch make on that. The date consists of four components: the day of the week, the number of days in the month, the name of the month, and the number of years. And as the minig is, as we'll comment on a little more later, it's the count of Bria Sa'olam, even though there were other counts in the Gemara, the Minyan Lashtaris, and sometimes they would count the Minyan on particular Melech, and so on and so forth, but it's universally accepted in all communities now that we use the Bria Sa'olam. So just a little bit about the some of the Pratim are filling in those components. So you have here a photocopy of the RCA pages that deal with RCA Madrich, that deal with filling in the ksuva. It was not the first Madrich of sorts for ksuva. One of the earliest was the Nachal Shiva, who summarized the halachas as they appear in the Gemaras and the Shulchan Aruch, primarily in terms of dates, in terms of the particulars. It's really late, post Gemara, based on the biblical Hebrew. They just figured out how do you write in the crispest the language. The Kitzur Nachal Shiva is another work that Rabbi Bleich mentioned. There was a summary of the Nachal Shiva that many, many Rabbanim used to carry around with them to Chuppis in order to make sure that they wrote it exactly right. And then there were other Madrichim. Rabbi Golden put out a Madrich at the beginning of the 20th century, and many Rabbanim used to use that. Now the RCA Madrich. Either way, certainly if you are filling out the Ksuva at the wedding, it's certainly kedai to take along some kind of Madrich to make sure that they guide you. So here, just following that's what I was quoting before, just somewhat facetiously, but call it by number. So if you have slot one, which is the day of the week, so you have how to indicate all the days of the week. The only surprise is Sunday, because in Tishir Shal Yom, we refer to Sunday in Ma'am Hebrew as well as Yom Rishon. Yom Rishon Avodah, so on and so forth. So here, in the language of Ksuvos, so the language of Shtaros, which is ultimately based on the Shulchan Aruch Simen Kuf Chavov, which is discussing Gittin, but the poskim carried over from Hilchos Gittin to all other Shtaros, so we use the phrase Be'echad, rather than Berishon. And the reason for that is because that's the way the Torah itself refers to Yom Rishon. In the story of creation, so Vahir Vayvoker Yom Echad. And even though there's a drush with respect to that, that it means that according to Rashi, quotes from the Medrash Chazal, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu was alone that day, he was only Echad, because even the Malachim were not created until day two. But the Vilna Gaon in the Hagos on Shulchan Aruch, Simukav Chavav, writes that Ein Mikra Yosef De Pshuta. So the Pshuta Shel Mikra is that the name of Sunday is validly Yom Echad. But it also seems to be Yom Rishon, because that's what Chazal write in the Mishnah Tamid, with the Yom Yom Rishon V'Shabbos, and we say in the Shul Shel Yom. But I guess maybe that's the more the crisper language, and we'd rather prefer to use the Lashon HaTorah. The Aruch HaShulchan gives a marmok. I'm not going to discuss it further. In Simukav Chavav, Sifyu Gimel, suggests a reason why in Shul Shel Yom we say Rishon, and in Shtaros we use Echad. Be that as it may, the convention is to use Echad. That said, if you write Rishon by mistake, it's kosher. Now, in general, the mistakes that you can get away with concerning a date are pretty liberal. If you have the wrong dates, it's the wrong date, so then you have to deal with a shtar me'ucher and a shtar muktzem, and sometimes the ksuv will be puzzled. But if you make minor grammatical mistakes, or even sometimes major ones, but it's clear to the reader of the ksuva what you meant, so for example, the post can discuss the case where instead of writing the word revi'i, the person wrote bi'i, leaving the reish, and maybe the reish was mitushtash. So the Shulchan Aruch writes that's kosher. So the Torah's Gittin, to give the Maramakam, the quoted by the Pitzchei Tshuva, Simukuf Chavav Sivkot Niyud, writes, the general rule is that as long as it's clear what the intention of the date writing was, then it's kosher. That allows a little bit of leeway, some more breathing room in terms of errors. Certainly, Mole Chaser and things like that, for sure, don't talk about that it's going to be kosher. But even greater mistakes, it could very well sometimes be kosher. Again, sometimes it's going to need a psak as to what's considered a massive mistake, minor mistake. But the Torah's Gittin says we have more liberty when it comes to dates, as long as it's clear what you meant. And that's as opposed to, let's say, names, where lesser mistakes, not all of them, but lesser mistakes could puzzle it. So let's say, I give an example, let's say you know of no one in the world whose name is Uvain. There's only Reuven. So, but by mistake, you write Uvain. So that could possibly look super. Because very nice, there's no one in the world like that. So maybe this guy's name is Uvain. So that will possibly. But there are only a certain number of days of the week. There is no B, right? So there's more liberty for errors to still be kosher. That said, lechachila, we try to do it as perfect as possible. Shufar d'shtara. So what we have is as follows. So the days of the week outside of Echad, which is somewhat unique. The days of the month and the number of the years, everything is written chosid, with the exception of 3 days of the week. Shlishi, Revi, Chamishi. Everything else is chosid in all of the columns that deal with numbers. So Sheni is written without a yud between the shin and the nun. Shishi is written without a yud between the shin and the shin. If you're up to year shishim, as we are now in terms of years, so it's shin, shin, yud, mem, not shin, yud, shin, yud, mem. Nothing is going to passel here, but lechachila we write a chaser. Shmonim. Should all be zocha. 57, 80, whatever. So that's also spelled chaser, even though it could be read as shmonim, but that's mostly biblical Hebrew, even though sometimes you have Shmonim Malay. That's what the post can write, that normally we follow the Lashon of Tanakh, or the majority of the Lashon of Tanakh. So it's all Chaser. And that's what the chart indicates. Again, there are 3 exceptions, Shlishi, Revi, Chamishi. So I note that there are a few typos, unfortunately, in the RCA Madrich. I called him up, apparently, as other people did, to complain that they should come up with a new edition already, because if it's a madrich, it has to be right. But so here, if you look there, so Bashishi is spelled Mali. So that's wrong. Again, it's not a psul, even though the Sefer, which Sefer was this? I don't know. One of the Sfarim raised a pickbook that maybe it should be a psul, because you could read it as Sisi. Okay, but you go back to the Torah's Gittin, but you know what you mean. Because there is no day of the week called Sisi. So you fill in the blanks. Okay, but but all things being equal, a Thursday night wedding,
what is that?
Will be Bashishi.
What's Sisi?
Sisi, be happy, to an akeva. Sisi v'simchi, basion. Okay. Same is true for Sheni, even though you could read it as, it's also grammatically incorrect, but Sheni, whatever, my tooth, all right, whatever. Okay, so, but Lamaisa, it's not ma'akev if you put in the mole. And again, the only things that are mole are lechachila, shlishi, revi, and chamish. Keep in mind, of course, and some people are tripped up with this on a question on the Bechina, that the Sunday night wedding, so you're going to write Basheni. Right? Because we don't follow the Goyishi day, we follow the Jewish day. So, used to be very common, of course, you had Friday weddings all the time, because the Takanos Aniyim, they wanted to have the Suda Shabbos together with the Suda Chasana. So it was very common to get married on Friday. But even now, it's not getting married on Friday, but you're getting married on the eve of Friday. So you're getting married Thursday night, so that's Bashish. A little bit about the days of the month now. So we already discussed the Mole Choser, I'm not going to review that again. So we note the following, that in the days of the month, we'll leave Rosh Chodesh for a little later. In the days of the month, so first we note that from day 2 through day 10, we write Yomim. Shnei Yomim, Shlosha Yomim, Arba Yomim. From 11 through 30, we use the convention of Yom. And again, that's based on Lashon HaTorah. We just read Parshas Baloscha, about the Slav, Chamisho Yomim, Asaro Yamim, Esrim Yom. Right, so it's a carryover from there. Again, it's not Ma'akev if you write it the other way. And here, I always quote the same joke every year, that if you don't have a Madrich, so you have a Chumash Breishis in one pocket, and you have a Sfir Sa'omer Siddur in the next pocket. And that'll tell you how to write these things. The Sfir Sa'omer will give you the days of the month, and the Breishis will tell you the days of the week. Of course, for the days of the week, you have to add a Beis before you. We'll get to the Beis concerning the days of the month in a moment, whether there is a Beis or not. Of course, it's not going to help you fully, because I just discovered recently that the Art Scroll Siddur, as do most Sidurim, spell Shmona Asar and Shmona V'Esrim Mole, and that is not the official convention in Siddurim. So it's not going to help you totally, but it's not possible. So at least they could, in a pinch, at least they'll get a B'dievet Koshik Siddur. Again, B'dievet is a vague term here. You know, it's good. It's kosher. It's kosher v'yosher. It's hard to say it's kosher v'dievet. You wrote the date. Just the conventions are to write it chosher. Also, note that from 11 through 29, with the exception of 20, whenever you have two digits to discuss, the ones and the tens, so the convention is, again, based on the Biblical Hebrew, Lashon HaTanakh, we write the units, the ones before the ten. So it's arba of esrim instead of esrim va'arba of. Achadasar instead of asara v'echad or asar v'echad, so on and so forth. And we also note that between 21 and 29, we connect the ones with the tens with the vav. Echad v'esrim, as opposed to shivasar, which was without a vav. Okay, so the chart's all there. Just highlighting some of the idiosyncrasies. Now let's discuss Rosh Chodesh. The easier situation is a case where Rosh Chodesh is either one day, and again, either the night of Rosh Chodesh or the day of Rosh Chodesh, either way, same idea. Or you have a two-day Rosh Chodesh and you're writing you're signing the ksuva on the, let's assume that's the day of the wedding too, we'll make it simple, on the second day of a two-day Rosh Chodesh. So we know that in our calendar, that is officially Aleph. So how do you write Aleph in the Ksuvah? So here you have in the chart, you have Yom Echad. So I note that that is a Talib Machlokis in terms of what the proper convention is, because in most of the places in Tanakh, I think including the last week's parasha also. It's written be'echad, not yom echad, but just echad, or be'echad. But in one place in Tanakh, two places, in Chagai, somewhere else, they dug these places up. So there it says yom echad. So which should we pick in a get, in a ksuva, etc.? So for whatever reason, even though normally you follow the majority, but some poskim favored yom echad because they felt it was clearer. Maybe if you write be'echad, you'll think it means like the first week as opposed to the first day. So lamaisa, it's a split in the poskim as to which is the more appropriate. And the bottom line is, whatever the madrich says, that wins, because that's what Rabbanim are going to do. So since the most famous madrich out there was the Kitzur Nachla Shiva, and the RCA copy from the Kitzur Nachla Shiva, so he won. That's what most Rabbanim will write in Ksuva. But I do note that Rabbi Bleich and Rav Mechaim Elchaim, Rav Melech Shechter Zatzal, so they thought that that in Gittin we use Be'echot. That seems to be the bottom line sock. So why not use the same convention in Ksuva? So either way, can't go wrong. But there is that split whether you write Yom Echad or Echad. The first day of a two-day Rosh Chodesh, so that's already a little lively. There is a sugya Masechta Nedarim, I think it's Daf Samach, with leaving aside all the particulars of the Gemara, but that's where the Rishonim slug it out as to how to refer to the first day of a two-day Rosh Chodesh. Because on the one hand, it's the first day, so maybe we should write Yom Echad. But on the other hand, it's really, calendarically, it's the 30th day of the previous month. So after the whole machlokis, so the Rishonim pretty much had a consensus that let's write everything. So there's no mistake whatsoever. Because we don't want to play around with making it a muktam, that it might sound like it's a muktam. And in a get, according to some Rishonim, even a mocher is possible. So we write the following, as you see in that box there in chart 2. We gave out, charts, if you pick it up. Yom Shloshim Lechodesh Ploni Shehu Rosh Chodesh Almoni. So for example, at the end of Sivan, you would write Yom Shloshim Lechodesh Sivan Shehu Rosh Chodesh Tammuz. And so on and so forth. The longest line you could possibly have is Yom Shloshim Lechodesh Adar HaRishon Shehu Rosh Chodesh Adar HaSheni. Now, if you happen to have the good mazel of getting married on that day, or being masadar for that day, you might have to get a special version of a ksuva, because you might not have enough room to fit that whole megillah in it. So, lechor, if you're stuck and you're at the wedding, that's it, so write small. There's no real chash ziv, because normally you like to write, you know, consistently with the rest of the stuff. But they see exactly and why you wrote it that way. So, but Chochamei Nevarosho, so maybe that would be a good time to get the computer ksuva, you know, so you could fill it in nicely. There is a detailed machlokis as to whether or not it's appropriate to add in a beis before the day of the month. The Nachla Shiva prefers not to put in the beis. Nachla Shiva, for those not familiar, is one of the classic works on Shtaris. So he became, if you will, like the Kimat the Posik Achron on Shtaris. And the kids of Nachla Shiva followed him. So he left out the beis. But in Hilchas Gittin, they prefer the beis. So when it comes to Ksuva, so again, you have split minhagim. I think the majority minig is to leave out the beis. Why? Because that's what the Madrich says. So they leave out the beis. And there's some Rabbanim who rattled the sabers a little bit and say, wait, why don't we follow the Gittin convention? Why are we accepting the Nachla Shiva on this? So, yesh v'yesh. The whole discussion, why you should or should not put in the beis, I'm not going to discuss it now. It's extra pratim. We have a limited time. Okay, so again, for the days of the week, we for sure put in a beis. But for the days of the month, some put in the beis. Bishnei yamim, bishloshi yamim, bishnayim, some don't. So if you're keeping score, so there are four ways to write the first day of Rosh Chodesh. Yom echad, echad, biyom echad, be'echad. Okay, either way is fine. So here I just note one extra quirk before we move on to the days of the month, and that's 30. On day 30, which we just discussed, instead of writing shloshim yom, we write yom shloshim. And the simple reason for that is because we're writing a whole Megillah. Yom Shloshim Shehu. What is the Shehu going on? It's going on Yom. So we highlight Yom Shloshim Shehu Rosh Chodesh, whatever. Okay, now we move on to the days of to the months themselves, which is of course written in slot 3 after Lechodesh. Yes. Bays before the days of the month. So we're going to write, if you put the bays in, bi'achar asar yom, bi'arba asar yom, as opposed to the way you have in this chart without the bays. So that's a discussion in the post. The days, the names of the months are pretty clear. I'm just going to highlight some of the quirks. Iyar is spelled with two yuds, which is the standard spelling. In Hilchas Gittin, that was a big machlokas rishonim, whether the proper spelling is with one yud and with two yuds. And for that reason, there was a minig not to write a get in Iyar, because we want to have the get totally naki from any chshashos of any kind of soul. And Rav Henkin already overruled that chshash, because b'shas etchak we write a get in Iyar with two yuds, and he said in America, everything's a shas etchak. Because if you're not going to get the get done now, who knows? Mi yodeh mayula jom. That's not a global statement that in America everything is shas etchak. With respect to Gittin, everything is a shas etchak, so make sure that you get the get done, so you write it with two yuds. Certainly in a ksuva, it can come up, either for those who get married after Lag Bomer, or if you're getting married on Rosh Chodesh Iyar, for those who have that minik, it's two yuds. Av is pronounced with a komatz, for those who want to be very medakta. Mar Cheshvan. So that's something that people can make mistakes on. It's commonly known as Cheshvan, but the official name of the month is Mar Cheshvan. Lots of pilpulim, some of them, Lanias Daiti, Pilpulim Shel Hevel, about why the Mar is added on. The simple pshat is because that's the name of the month. So if you actually can kash yourself a maisa, the name of the month is Mar Cheshvan, one of the scholars pointed out that in ancient Babylonian, Mirach means month. So maybe that's where it came from. It's not Mar Cheshvan, maybe it's Mirach Shivan. All right, either way. We pronounce it Mar Cheshvan, but it's really one word, and so you don't put a space in, and b'di'evit, if you wrote Cheshvan happily to get pashit, points out that it's kosher, because that's the way people know it by. But you do write Mar Cheshvan. For those keeping score on grammar, so Shvat is pronounced that way. Okay, so imagine a Masada Kiddushin or a reader of a Ksuba is going to write B'chamish Asiyom L'chodesh Shvat. Okay, so but that's the way it's pronounced. And we write typically Adar HaRishon, Adar HaSheni. Even though in common jargon we normally say Adar Rishon, Adar Sheni, but in formal language we use the extra hey. Okay, a little bit about the years, although much of it we did already. You connect all the parts of the year, the thousands with the hundreds, with the tens and the ones, with Vavs. Just as we saw concerning the days of the month, when it comes to numbers 11 through 19, so you put the ones before the tens, but the years are a little bit different when it comes to after 20. Because unlike the days of the month, where even from 21 through 29, you put the ones before the tens, when it comes to the years, you always put, not always, but after 20, you put the tens before the ones. So it's, as you see, v'esrim u'shtayim, v'esrim u'shalosh, so now we would say v'shishim, v'sheva, so on and so forth, as opposed to v'sheva, v'shishim. And one final word with respect to the years is that we're using Lashon Nekeva, as opposed to the days of the month, which is Yomim, so it's Lashon Zachar, which Kayadua is flipped, right? Shlosha is Lashon Zachar, so on and so forth. In the years, which is Shana, which is Lashon Nekeva, so we use Lashon Nekeva, which is Shalosh, Arba, so on and so forth. Okay, putting it all together, we count to the Briyas Olam. And that's the date that's commonly used in common informal documents and also in legal documents. As we mentioned before, there were other counts. So that is why, one of two reasons, why we connect the date with the place that the ksuva is being signed. L'minyan she'anu monin kan, and then we write the name of the place. Why do we do that? Write the date and write the place. Why do we say, according to the count that we count here, as if to imply that in some other town they're counting differently. So that's what the Get Pashit quotes from the earlier sources, that it was a shufra delishna, it was an extra language in the shtar to avoid any kind of confusion, because at least in the past there were other numbering systems of the years. Some counted the Lamin Yishtaris to a certain melech and so on and so forth, and the Get Pashit adds, this is reason number two, that up until relatively recently, there were different communities that counted the years of Bria's Olam a year off, which depends on whether you count the days of creation, which took place in Elul, ending off in Tishrei, again, assuming B'Tishrei Niv Olam, which was really the sixth day of creation. So those 5 days, is that year one, or is year one Adam Rishon's year? So there was a dispute in different communities. So Lamin Yishanim Onu Kan tells it all. Here in Brooklyn, Masa Brooklyn, whatever, in Yerushalayim, this is the date we use. So there's no possibility of interpreting the Shtar as a Muktam and passing it, because you know exactly how they count there. Of course, nowadays it's really a relic, because it's all communities count this way, but that's still the convention that we use. Lamin Yishanim Onu Kan, which now shifts us to a discussion of the name of the Mokom. But just one last detail here. My goal is certainly not to knock the RCA Madrich. It's very, very useful, but they made some typos, so we can't help it. So this is a famous typo, well known in rabbinic circles, especially in our circles who use the RCA Madrich, that they skip the words Levrias Olam. It's not Ma'akev, because we know what we mean by this count, because that's what everybody uses, but you're supposed to put that in. That's a blatant omission. I'm sorry? Right, so the convention is without a hay. I'm not sure why, but that's what we use. Levrias Olam. So that should be put in. I believe, unless it was corrected recently, that even in the Ksuva kit that the RCA put together, that also had Marv Ravi Rawilig's Shlita's prenup together with that, and a nice, ornate, take out the sting, I guess, that they're already discussing, possibility of divorce. So that also didn't have Levrias Olam. But I think they probably corrected that by now. But the Madrich, I think they still didn't correct. Yeah.
Why is Levrias Olam significant? You're already attaching to the way we have this certain place.
Well, we're just identifying what these years mean. So again, it's more explicit. Again, you could have done without it, and that's exactly why you could omit it, b'di'evit. Happily for the RCA Madrich, that they can't sue them for rabbinic malpractice. Okay, so... it's really a good madrich. It's very useful. It has a card to hold for Sheva Brachas, has drushes to give. let's now move on to the name of the place. If you omit the name of the place by mistake, it's not Ma'akev, happily. This is the psak of the Shulchan Aruch in Simen Mem Gimel, Siv Chav Beis. However, just to note, I think it's based on an Achal Shiva, the Ksuva Kehilchasa in Perakei Siftes writes that Lechatchila you should really write another Ksuva if you omitted it. That would come up more in, let's say, an artisan's Ksuva, where the Imamish omitted it totally. Otherwise, you could just fill it in before the Edom sign. If you forgot to fill it in after the Edom already signed, so that's a more complicated the question, whether you could fill it in after. But certainly before the Edom sign, you could just fill it in. But for the Eved, Mikra Din, it's not Ma'akev. What if you have a Shinui? You write the wrong Mokom. Instead of writing, that was a whole deal with the atrium, whether it's in Spring Valley or whether it's in Muncie. So I think the Poskim are pretty much named the Vagamru, that both are kosher, and then they decided you should write something. I'm not sure what the something is. In some Machnas, they write both. But the Eved will both be kosher, because legally it's this, and everybody calls it that. So either way, everybody knows what we're talking about. But let's say it was worse than that. Let's say instead of writing Brooklyn, you wrote Queens. So that's a more serious discussion, whether then the Shulchan Aruch in Simen Mem Gimel Siv Chaf says that the Shtar would be puzzled in such a circumstance, and presumably Aksuva would be as well. However, the Shach in Sivkot Mem Aleph is Machshirit. So this will also come up if you really, really botch the spelling of the name of the town, because that would also be a shinui shem here. So some poskim wanted to say that that's better, because that's as if you left it out. Because let's say you're in Buffalo, and instead of writing Buffalo, you write Muffalo. So there ain't no such town, Muffalo. Let's assume for a moment that there isn't. So it's as if you left it out. That's what some poskim suggested. But many poskim in Hilchos Gittin say not so. They say that if it's a shinui, even if there is no such town, that is the halacha of shinui shem ir. Whatever the halacha is about shinui shem ir. So you have to be careful in terms of the spelling, and that's why Rabbi Bleich, because that's something that you're not going to get from the Kitzurim, is spending quite a bit of time on proper spelling of cities. Because even if you're not putting in the family name, and and the person has a Jewish name, and let's make it simple, it's a Hebrew name, so that has a clear spelling, but you have to know spelling for names of cities. And since people are getting married more and more in exotic places, that you don't necessarily have a clear-cut Mesorah on how to spell it, so but Bonham have to know how to spell it. Again, if you're filling out the Ksuv in advance and not on the fly, so you have some time to consult.
Why isn't that done?
Why isn't what done? Fill it out in advance? You mean fill it out in advance with the name of the place you're going to go to and finally sign? Many people do it. By the mumchim, so why bother? You know, it's like an electrician who doesn't bother to turning off the circuit breaker. You could do it there. It takes 5 seconds. But there's a very good reason to do it earlier also, because even amongst the mumchim, you can't make a mistake. And there's so many times when you know that you have to write a nuksuva. You just, you know, the pen slipped. So why not fill it in advance? Again, there is a slight pickbook, as we mentioned before. Tosis and Gittin Daf Pei writes that you're supposed to, he's makbid on the mokam haksiva also, that it should have the right zman and mokam. It's not maker of din, but so certainly is ample reason to be able to fill it out in advance. Certainly with the computerized ksuvas, so many people are doing exactly that. Okay? I note a little bit, some extra details, leaving the more complicated questions to Rabbi Bleich. Some put in a bays before the name of the town, some don't. I'm just noting it. The Nachla Shiva has with a bays, the Kitzanach Shiva has without it. So sometimes you'll hear under the chuppah, Brooklyn, New York. Sometimes you'll hear under the chuppah, Bid Brooklyn, New York. Either way, it's fine. The way I just described it, Rabbi Bleich doesn't like it at all. We'll see in a moment, because of the fact that there ain't no such town called Brooklyn, New York. We'll get to that in a moment. Do you have to describe what the town is, other than just stating its name? So in Hilchas Gittin, and that was the general convention in Shtoris too, they wouldn't just write the name of the place. They would write what that place is. So if it was a little hamlet, they would write Kfar. And if it was a bigger area, so they would write Ir or Mosa. And if it was a major metropolis or walled city, so they would write Krach. So already in the late Rishonim, I think the Tashbetz quotes this and others as well, they said, you know, you're going to get into problems because you're going to write Ir instead of Krach, Krach instead of Ir, and maybe it's going to be considered a Shinu Shem Mokom. So just write Mosa, because Mosa means place, so you can't go wrong. It is a place. So, and there's a raya from a Gemara that way, that that Masa means a small town, it also means a big town. And I don't know if Rabbi Bleich discussed this yet, but there's a detailed minhagim way whether you should put Masa before the name of the town or afterward. Did he discuss that yet? So probably will be discussed soon. Right. So in Gittin, we normally put the Masa afterward. And that's for, as the Beis Shmuel explains, because it connects to the names of the river. Brooklyn Masa. The or Bib Brooklyn Masa, the Yasva Al Nahar, whatever, East River. Whatever, I'm not sure which river they write for Brooklyn. So the place that sits on this river, but in Aksuv you don't write the river. We'll see later whether we substitute something else because of that. The rivers are put in to absolutely clarify which city it was in case there's another city with the same name. So, but since in Aksuv you're not writing the river, so why not put Masa first? It seems to be a Ramah that implies that way. Even though the Ramah is not speaking about Ksuv, he's talking about Gittin, but the Beis Shmuel explains that the Ramah means that whenever you're not riding a river, so you put Masa first. Nonetheless, Ramosha, based on Agra, suggests to always put Masa last. So sometimes you'll hear Masa Brooklyn or Bim Masa Brooklyn, sometimes you'll hear Brooklyn Masa or Bib Brooklyn Masa. Either way, it's certainly kosher. Rabbi Bleich had a slight preference, I believe, for Masa first, as I'll discuss in the Shurim, but I don't want to preempt it too much. But cannot deny that there is an extremely common practice out there that both Rabbi Bleich and the Ksuvik Ilchasa just throw up their hands and say, where did that come from? That they just omit Masa. So the first one in writing that I saw note this is the Nisuan Kolchasim, Rav Adler. And he says, Yesh noigim lahashmit te'ur ofi shema mokum. And why are they doing that? Super machmir in terms of making a mistake. So they don't even write masa. maybe it's not a masa. I wonder, maybe it's not a masa. It is a place. So just leave it out. So that's why you very commonly hear, and Rabbi Bleich is very upset about this, again, all relatively speaking here. He says he cringes whenever he hears a ksuva that just says Brooklyn, you know, without a masa, because that's not the convention, but certainly not a psul. But many chashuvei rabbanim, including several in our yeshiva, omit the word masa, based on that minhag quoted by the Nesuim Kochasim. I don't know why, what it's based on, but that is a common practice. Now we move on to the next issue. They quote, just to make it a little lively, they quote from the Chazon Ish that he would recommend to write Zichron Meir, comma, Bnei Brak. So there are at least three mistakes in that, according to Rav Leich Shlita. You don't have to put the neighborhood in, you don't put in a comma, and you can't just connect it, you got to write something between, like B'masa Bnei Brak or B'ir Bnei Brak. But you see from that, they're not all Rabbanim or Makbid on those Kepedis. So that's what they quote in the Sfarim, that in Bnei Brak, they would often, in that neighborhood, they would write Zichron Meir. So that's what you oftentimes hear also, Brooklyn, New York. We'll get to that in a moment. Do you write the name of the state? Well, what would motivate writing the name of the state? That's because we don't write the rivers. So there's a website called Brooklyn.com, which collects the fact that there are at least 50 Brooklyns in the United States alone. I don't know, maybe in other countries there are more. So that would be a reason to write Brooklyn something New York, because you want to write the name of the town, right? So I didn't write the name of the town if I'm not identifying where the town is. Most Jews live in Brooklyn, whatever. Okay, so that's why some were pushed to write the name of the state. The first one to formalize this was Rav Moshe Feinstein in Tshuva. I don't have the exact reference, but I think Rav Bleich will refer to it. I'm sorry, no, I do have it. It's Chelak Dalet, Eben Ezer, Simen Kuf, Os Beis. That some had the practice, which Rav Moshe seems to somewhat recommend, to write the name of the state. Now, let's keep in mind that worst comes to worst, if there is another city by the name of what you're writing, so the maximum you could say is the equivalent of omitting it. Well, what is the halacha of an omitted city? It's kosher. So it's not going to be psul, but Lanias Daiti, I just thought, so shouldn't you write it? If you want to not make it a joke, if you know there's another city, so shouldn't you put in a further identifying mark, at least a chachila? But the Meister Rabbi Bleich, because of issues of spelling errors and possible spelling errors, and also the fact that it certainly wasn't the old convention, so he preferred not to put the state in. It wasn't necessary. If you're going to put it in, as is the practice of many, based on Rav Moshe, Rabbi Neuberger has that practice, and I think Rabbi Willig also has the practice. I think Rabbi Schechter too. So how do you put it in? So there are two conventions. The first convention is to write B'masa Brooklyn or whatever first, and then B'medinas, New York. The second, and that's the convention that Rabbi Bleich would prefer if you're going to put it in, because it gives you some explanatory vocabulary as to what New York is, that it's a greater area other than the city. However, there is a very widespread minhag to just write Brooklyn, New York, some with a comma, some without a comma. So Rabbi Bleich and other Sfarim as well are not so happy about that convention, because shtaris are written to be clear without punctuation. That's the ancient Hebrew and Aramaic convention. It's relatively recently we started putting in commas and so on and so forth. So as Rabbi Bleich says, there is no place in the world Brooklyn, New York. What does he mean by that? That if you're speaking rabbinic Hebrew, then you have to put in some vocabulary. Otherwise, it's Brooklyn, New York. Like, just read it through. So it's not going to possible because everybody knows what you mean, but formal shtaris conventions would be to put in an explanatory word. And other Rabbanim apparently hold that now we live in the 21st century and people know what it means. It's to be interpreted within context. So just parenthetically, that seems to be a machlokis amongst the later poskim as to how loyal they have to be to the original conventions, and to what extent could you begin to institute newer kinds of conventions that are based on our own current grammar. It has nafkaminas for putting in punctuation. It has nafkaminas whether you could put in anything in parentheses in a ksuva. So there's discussions back and forth. Some rabbanim say no problem. Rabbi Bleich says absolutely not. Take it in parentheses. It's like ziyuf, right? You could always add in parentheses anywhere after it's already signed. So here too, they're slugging it out whether you have to put in the Medinas or not. So I wanted to mention that Rabbi Bleich does not prefer it. Rabbi Neuberger, meaning, let's backtrack. Rabbi Bleich prefers, if you're going to put in the name of the state, to put in the Medina, not to just write Brooklyn, New York. And Rabbi Neuberger, I just spoke to him 2 days ago, he said, Dafka, you should leave out the Medinas. And he told me why, because he's not so convinced that the word Medina means state. Normally, Medina means country. So to get out of that shaila, even though, again, it's a minor, minor shaila, none is going to passel, but he, Dafka, preferred to write the other way, Brooklyn, New York, you know, whatever the case is. I note that Rav Shechter Shlita is of the opinion that the Medinas does not mean the state. It means the metropolis. So when you're writing Brooklyn, the Medinas, New York, what that means is the borough of Brooklyn that's in the major metropolis, New York. So therefore he felt that the only time you should put in such a thing is when you're writing something in such a kind of similar area. But if you're writing a get a ksuva in Teaneck, so there's no need to put in or reason to put in Medinas, New Jersey. So just note, bota daiti eitzel adasa gedolim, but Rav Moshe and his tshuva is not going that way. Rav Moshe and his tshuva, he's referring to Medina as the name of the state. Rabbi Schechter's approach is based on what I could see, based on perhaps the Nachal Shiva, but Moshe himself was talking about the states, so according to that, they would follow. And that seems to be the common practice for those who do it, that they write it outside of New York City too. Medina's New York, Medina's New Jersey, so on and so forth. I'd like to discuss a little bit of, again, some of the details of out of the ordinary places. Let's say I'll just quote one shaila that I came up with my one and only Seder Kedushin that I did for a student of mine. He got married in the Hilton in Pearl River. So I went to MapQuest and I discovered that Pearl River is not really in the town of Pearl River where people live. It's leading into it. So these are some questions you're going to have to consult with Rabbanim as to how to write. I think in the end I wrote Pearl River because I called him up and I say, where's your hotel? Pearl River. So the Aruch HaShulchan writes that if that's what people call that area, you know, even if it's not necessarily formally part of the area, although probably the jurisdiction was also part of Pearl River, but even without that, if that's what they call it, so certainly you could use that name. But there are other such similar shilas. Sometimes you get married in some country club in Mille Hoopitzville, it's not even in any jurisdiction. Rabbi Bleich will discuss some of these more colorful questions. A little bit about transliteration. So I must say that this is not for the novice. And anyone who does not have considerable knowledge on this should ask a Rav how to spell things. Don't do it on your own. You could learn it. It takes a while to get used to it. It's not so difficult. Shas and Paiskim is much more difficult than the rules of transliteration. But nonetheless, if you don't know what you're doing, so don't do it. Ask someone else to help you. So, that said, we are in a smicha program, so I just wanted to summarize the rules, as did Rav Bleich, but to add a little more as well. A kamat, says in the word cup, is transliterated as an aleph. A patach, as in the word car, is transliterated as nothing or as an aleph. What do you mean? Sometimes you'll put in the aleph for clarity. That's a whole... when yes, when no, you can't go, it's not going to passel if you put it in. So if you're not sure, you can put it in. But the standard convention is a patach is nothing. But sometimes you put in an aleph for clarity. It's a big din in the contemporary poskim, mostly orally, as to how do you transliterate what we call a short A. Staten Island. It's not Staten Island, so it's not a patach, it's not sta, it's sta. That's why I gave the example before of car, right? Ah, that's a patach. But Staten, most A's in the names of cities, if you don't live in Holland, are as, right? I don't have examples of the Hackensack, right? So on and so forth. How do you transliterate that? So the more common practice in Gittin is the surprising way, to transliterate it as an ayin, Hackensack. Staten Island. Why? Because an A phonetically is somewhere between an A and an E. So In Gittin, it's normally, we put in an ayin. So that has a lot of nafkaminas for transliteration. Rabbi Willig thought that the reason that the big poskim in America, Mar Moshe and Rav Henkin, started that convention is because they were all European. And therefore they pronounced it, as did many Jews during that era, they pronounced it Set Nine. It wasn't that they were saying that an ah is an eh, but that's what they called it. So the bottom line is, Rav Moshe won, at least in Gittin, that in most of the cases, they usually put in an ayin. So that's why I just note that you have split minhagim as to how you're going to transliterate towns that don't have any convention for Gittin for Ksuvus. Some will follow the ayin, the more rigorous get the convention, and some say, listen, we're dealing with a Ksuva here, the stakes are not as high. Let's go back to what it really should be, which is an aleph, even though it's not an ah, it's an ah, yeah, but it's closer to an aleph than it is to a patach, than it is to a segel. So if that's the case, keep in mind that if you're going to go that route, so you could either put in an aleph or omit it, because the convention of a patach is either to omit it, which is the standard convention, or sometimes to put in the aleph for clarity. Okay, an O sound, such as Hoboken, right? So that's, even though there are different ways, but the standard spelling is aleph vov. An U sound is one vav, like a shuruk. An oi sound is a vav yud. A chirik sound, a chirik gedola, is certainly a yud. What about a chirik katana? It's a little tricky. So sometimes we'll put in, what's a chirik katana? Big day, right? As opposed to ear. Chirik gedola is e. Chirik katana is e. So it's very similar to a shva. So sometimes you'll put in the yud, like let's say you had a town called Hittel, so you'll definitely put in, or Gittel, also important for transliteration, a Yiddish name. So that's Gimel Yud, because it's like a Chira Katan. But if you could make a case that it's really more like a Shva, for example, because as Rabbi Black points out, we always follow the way it's pronounced, not the way it's written, usually. So Hudson is transliterated as Hey Aleph Dalet Samach Nun. They ignore the O because it's not really pronounced. So why don't they put in a yud? Because like chirikotan, so they consider that more like a shva. So a shva is nothing. So they just write hey aleph dalet samach nun. Again, you can go batty with this a little bit, but I'm trying to give over as much as I can. Ve'idach zil gemar, and you should be familiar at least with the basics. That's why, for example, getting back to the shva. So if you have a place like Baton Rouge, right? So you're not going to put in anything between the tes and the nun. Hudson we already mentioned. Rabbi Willig, I don't know if there are weddings there, but in his forum, so he writes that he is the Rav in Riverdale. So that he doesn't put an ayin between the Vav and the Resh, River, because there's no real sound there. Even though some other Rabbanim do. Okay. Good. That's off the map. No, it's good, but I can't give all the rules, so let's just give the basics. And a segol, as if it's a straight segol, so of course it's ayin. Tzeira. So I think Rabbi Black probably discussed this, right? Surprisingly, a tzeira, the proper convention is one yud. The standard Yiddish convention is two yuds, but the proper convention is one yud. That's why in Lakewood, Masa Lakewood, where Bez Hashem, my brother-in-law is getting married next week, so that's Lamed Yud Kuf Vav Vav. Aleph Vav Dalet, we'll get to that in a second, why that funny Aleph there. But an A is Yud. Now, Bidyavid is probably kosher. Because, okay, Yiddish convention, so you stuck it in. As a matter of fact, sometimes in Gittin and Ksuvis, sometimes they would throw in the extra Yud too, but the standard convention is one Yud. Anytime, by writing one Yud, it's going to lead to a situation where they might misread it as another word, so sometimes we'll put in an extra Ayin. Ayin yud, because if you say it fast, if you say a segel with a chirik, a, say ayin yud, a. So that's why, for example, the town Santa Fe, well, the second part of it was spelled fe ayin yud rather than fe yud, because that we have a Hebrew word, right? P. So you don't want to miss. So that's why sometimes for clarity you put in the ayin. Great Neck, Rabbi Palakov from the Great Neck Synagogue. So he has a Kabbalah from his Rebbeim to write Gimel Reish Ayin Yud Tes. Even though you could have gotten away without the Ayin, but maybe for clarity, because there is an English word greet, right? So they put in the extra Ayin. So interestingly, for clarity, it put in an extra Ayin, not an extra Yud. But the normal convention is a Yud, which would mean the standard spelling of Leib should be Lamed Yud Beis, and not Lamed Yud Yud Beis, unless he's a Chsidishi, then goes by the name Leib. And that I think Ray Black probably discussed, right? He usually discussed that. Okay. I wanted to mention a few other dizzying rules before we get to some more meeting material. When you have an oo at the end of a word, you normally will put in an extra aleph for just flowery reasons. So New York is nun vav aleph, generally speaking. And the same thing with other kinds of news. When you have an oo after a V sound or a W sound, parenthetically, I should have mentioned this earlier, a W sound obviously has to be transliterated as two vavs, because there is no wa in Hebrew. So when you have an oo sound after a V or a W, so what are you going to do? So you'll have vav vav for the V or W, and then you'll have a vav. So maybe that's uv.
V is also right? Vav?
Yeah. Right, because you can't put a one vav, because that's an oo. So what are you going to write if you have vu? I'll give you an example. Lakewood. Back to that town. Right, so you're going to write lamed yud kuf, and then you're going to write vav vav, and then another vav. So maybe that's Lake Uvad, or Lake Uvad. So therefore, the poskim stick in an extra aleph as a placeholder to have the U. Lake Vud. You have a similar example in the other direction, where you have the U sound before a V, and that's on the Bima, from Rabbi Lifshitz at Sal's town. Suvalk. So how are you going to write that? Samach Vav. Okay, that's Su. And now Vavav. So maybe it's Svulk. Right? So that's why it's, look on the Bima, they did it right. Samach Vav Aleph, Su, the Aleph placeholder, and then Vav. Okay, good. Enough said about that. I wanted to mention that, as I mentioned before, that if you film the Ksuv in advance, so you could avoid these questions by consulting a Rav who knows what he's doing here. And I just as a food for thought, you could have gotten all of these problems. Here, the Rav has his office in Queens, New York. Well, I know how to spell Queens. Kuf Vav Vav Yud Nun Samach. You decide to get married in Overland Park. That's your problem. Come to my office. We're going to have the Eidim. We're going to make a Kinyan. And we're going to sign it in my office. So why can't you do that? So as Rabbi Black will discuss, as we discussed earlier, because the poskim want to avoid writing the date of the Ksuva, even though Mikir Adin, it very well might be Kosher, but Rav Moshe Fein said you can't do that. He had that Muktam. The date in the Ksuva cannot be earlier than the day of the wedding. So because of that, you have no choice but to write the town without actually getting married, because that's the date of the wedding. So of course, if you're a real Chacham, you could, if the Chassan's getting married at 3 p.m., so at 10 a.m., you know, when he's still home in Brooklyn or Queens, you can make a Kabbalah's Kinyan, etc., but they don't have time for the rabbi at 10 a.m. if they're getting married at 3 p.m. So whatever. So we're stuck with coming up with all these original kinds of spellings. Okay, let's go back to the text now of the Ksuv. Spent a little too much time on that topic, but whatever. We'll have to squeeze in what we can to the end. The third line of the Ksuv says the word Eich. How? What does that mean? How what? So the Tashbates points out, parenthetically, I keep quoting the Tashbates because a lot of the conventions in Ksuvis were outlined by two of the Gedolei HaRishonim, one a little earlier, one a little later. One was the Tashbates, and this is in Chelek Gimel. Sorry. Chelek Gimel, I think it's Simon Kuf Aleph, and also the Maram Mintz, one of the Gedolei Ashkenaz, and Simon Kuf Tes. So he said, everyone's writing a Ksuva wrong, so let me give you the rules. Okay, so Eich basically means that this is the language of the Eidim. Many of you probably learned the Masech Gittin, that there was a Nusach in the Get where they actually included the word Eich, and the Rosh was Mefakbek on that Nusach, because as is well known, the language of a Get is first person, the Baal, he's doing the talking. The language of Shtaris is the Eidim talking. So the Eich means we, the undersigned, are testifying how the following happened. That's why there was one nusach of the ksuva that made it more explicit. Anan sahadi eich. And floating around our circles is something that they call Rav Shechter's nusach of the ksuva. What is Rav Shechter's nusach of the ksuva? So since there are so many slightly different versions of the ksuva, so Rabbi Shechter sat down with Dr. Steiner from the Revel School and put together, based on the various neschos, well, what he thought was the most accurate kind of text. And one of the things they changed was Anan Sahadi. So I just want to note that that's not the standard version. If you read it under the ksuva, you're definitely going to raise rabbinic eyebrows. And the ksuva kolchas has a whole essay to say why you shouldn't write Anan Sahadi. Okay, can't win. But just parenthetically to note that Rabbi Shechter's Nusach HaKsuva is the same ksuva with a letter here, a letter there, a letter there. It's not a fancy, you know, brand new ksuva.
That's the biggest change.
That's the biggest change. The rest is just very, very minute details. The next word in the RCA ksuva is the word Hechasan. So here let's mention as follows. We mentioned the Chasan's name a total of 6 times in the ksuva. And we mentioned the Kala's name 3 times. So the convention is that we mention the full name, meaning name and father's name, only the first and the last times. Because after that already, so people got the message, and you just write his first name to say, I don't know exactly how the convention began. Rest of Maramins records, and everyone records it after him. Same thing with the Kala, only the first and the last times to write it out in full. And you could see that in the RCA version here, where they don't leave room for the ben outside of the first and the last. And how do you refer to the chasan? So here, a little extra detail here. Outside of the first time, we refer to him as chasandinan, 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 chasandinan. What about the first time? So the Maram Mintz quotes from Rav Sajigoyen. Interesting, so early for such an interesting and such a detail. You don't call him a chasan the first time. Why? Because the ksuva is telling you a story. And what is the story? That this man told this woman heavily into, meaning he married her. Well, before he told her that, he wasn't a chasan. So the standard convention, as recorded by Ram Mintz and others after him, is not to put in the word Achasan before him. So the RCA is non-conventional, and they put it in. There were neschos that had it. So here, I can't say wrong on this. That's why I put it in parentheses, not the standard convention the first time. Similarly, concerning the Kala, we refer to her throughout the Ksuva and the other 2 times as Moras. Morasara, Bas, Rav Yaakov, etc., the first time, she's not a Moras yet, right? Moras, Mrs., MRS, right? So, but the first time, she's not a Mrs. So we only refer to her as the Kala Basilta, though. I think that clock is slow, right? It might be what time is it now?
2 minutes slow.
It's 2 minutes slow, so we're really in trouble. Good. So now, further. If he's a Bacher, which is normally the case, so the many put in the word HaBacher. If he's not a bacher, he was married before, so many will put in nothing, and some will put in a reish with a chupchik, like Reb, even if he's not a Rav. If he's already a smicha, so you could write Rav. The standard practice, of course, to add the fact that he's a Kohen or a Levi, and that you put after the father's name when the first and last times, and after his own name all the other times. So you keep repeating, a Kohen, a Levi. Except when you mention the father, you put it as well. Same thing for the Kala. Obviously, the Kala is not a Kohen Levi, so you put it after the father's name. How particular do you have to be about the proper spelling of the Chasan and Kala's name? And to what extent do you follow the way they spell it? So here again, we have 2 conventions. Rabbi Bleich Shlita and Rabbi Willig Shlita and many others as well, they hold, don't follow what they say. Just look in an authoritative book of how to spell names, and that's the way you should spell it. So, for example, Rebbetzin Willig's name is Fega, and I don't know, I think she spelled her name the right way, so I don't think there was any problems. But a lot of times in contemporary world, so many Fegas will spell the name Pei Yud Yud Gimel Aleph Gimel Hey. So, how rigorous do you have to be here? So, Rabbi Bleich and Rabbi Willig are conventionalists. You follow a state in the Svarim. And Rabbi Shechter and others as well, within reason you can follow their spelling. So here's where you need a little bit of shimush to know what's within reason. Okay, but I just throw that out to point out there are different practices in this. So if you have a modern Golda, normally it would be Gimel Aleph Dalet Lamed Aleph, but in Hebrew they're going to say Gimel Vav Lamed Dalet Hey. So you'll have many Rabbanim who will say, so leave the Gimel Vav Lamed Daled Hey. That's the way she signs her name. But others don't go that deep. Others are more rigorous. The same is true for family names. Some put it in, some don't. Rabbi Bleich already discussed why yes, why no. Rabbi Bleich holds you should leave it out because you just spell it wrong. Rabbi Willig holds put it in if there's absolutely no pickbook whatsoever as to the proper spelling of it. So that's why, for example, one of his mechutanim is Weinberg. And he spells his name with one vav. Weinberg. So because of that, he left the family name out. So Rabbi Bleich says, always leave it out. Rabbi Willig says, put it in if there's no problems. Rabbi Neuberger also leaves it out. And Rabbi Shechter says, nope, put it in. Rabbi Moshe said to put it in. Recommended. The Rav said to put it in. So you put it in and you spell it correctly. Rabbi Shechter is of those who hold that you could be a little more liberal as to what's called proper spelling. So as long as it's not wrong, you can get away with it. So my name's Haber. Properly, it should be spelled Hey Yud Beis Reish by the conventions, so maybe Hey Yud Beis Ayin Reish. I spell it Hey Beis Reish. So at my wedding, Rabbi Shechter said, so Hey Beis Reish, that's okay. You could put a Tzeir on that Hey. It reads right. Rabbi Bleich quotes as a reductio ad absurdum argument that certainly you can't spell the name Suchet. Shoichet, French Suchet, right? The Shoichet. And Rabbi Shechter said, why not? That's what the name is. It's a French Frenchization of Suchet. So here again, you have different conventions as to how rigorous you have to be in the family names. We describe what the Kala is in terms of her religious, in terms of her marriage status.
Well, what's that based on?
I don't know. It's based on the Beis Shmuel, a long Beis Shmuel in Hilchos Gittin, as to sometimes you follow signing, sometimes you don't. I'll tell you, in America, Rabbi Bleich Svara makes a little, Lenius Daiti makes more sense, because you spell your name that way. When? On your test paper? When you're writing, you know, a test in Stern College or whatever, and when do you spell it? In Israel, Chesima, okay, it's Chesima. You're signing it all the time, so I think that's part of the issue.
Sorry.
No, but the word, the name Suchet was derived from Shoichet, and then if you spell it in English, S-C-H-O-C-H-E-T, and then you become French, so then French you leave out the T because you got to drive people crazy. So the Shoiresh name is Shoichet. Alright, so Rabbi Bleich thought that was a reductio ad absurdum argument. Of course you can't write Shoichet in that case. Of course you have to write Suchet. But as Rabbi Rosenzweig pointed out, one person's reductio ad absurdum is another one's in Achinami, right? So okay. So if you look at chart number 6, this is scattered throughout the Ksuva where we identify the status of the Kala. For the Chosin, it's pretty simple. Either he's a Bachar or he's not, but there's no real status we're going to give him. So either it's Bachar or Reb, and you're going to write that the first time, the rest you could leave out Bachar. But for the Kal, it's important to identify who she is, so what she is. So here we have Besulta for a Besula, Armalta for an Almana, Misarachta for a Grusha, and Giorta for a Gioris. What if, especially a more common Shaila now, with Baruch Hashem, the Baal Tshuva movement, so a lot of times you have a Kala who was a Be'ula beforehand. So, I don't know if Rabbi Bleich discussed this already, to some extent certainly will. So, there are different shittas on this. If she was an Avelis L'Kosher law, so Rav Moshe says you could just cover it up. You could write Besulta if you want. You could write something else also, but you could write Besulta if you want, because no nafkamina. But if she was an Avelis to Apostle law, so you can't play games. Because if that marriage ever ends in the death of the husband, so she's Apostle Kohen. Not because of the husband, but because of what happened before. So, that's why you have to write something. So, what are you going to write? So there are a lot of options. Some write Be'ulta, some write Itza, some write nothing. They just write Dol. Some write Kalosa. She's a Kal. Okay, that she is. So I think the more common convention is to write Itza in that kind of case. Aleph, Yud, Tof, Aleph. And you can consult the Rabbanim as to how to navigate it, because the post can write, but you don't have to read that. The Marsham already noted that. I discovered the Marsham writes that as well. You can read Besulta, read whatever you want. Out of video. So Rabbanim know to ignore the video. They know that people play games. Look at the document. You want to know what the woman is? Look at the document. Then what the Mizvot HaTzadik should write. And Rabbi Willig even arranged for two ksuvas so that the reader of the ksuva should make a mistake. and a fake one and a real one. Okay, so that's extra details. If it's no gay, you can look into that. Similarly, in the number 7, if you look at the ksuva, we're referring to the type of money she's entitled to. So we refer to the mohar. So that you refer to, the convention is chart 7, mohar psulaichim, amur lusaichim, sarchusaichim, giyorsu, okay, giyorsaichim. Got a little bit of tongue twister. How much is the ksuva? So kayadua, for a psula, it's 200, and for everyone else, it's 100. That's chart 8. For a basula, you write Mason, right? That's Masayim in Aramaic. And for everyone else, you write Mea. What about the case of the Ba'ula? So again, if there's no Nafkamina, Lekuhuna, so Ramosha writes, write whatever you want. The Chasna wants to be Machayiv himself more, Gazintait. You want to write Basulta, write Basulta. To protect her covenant in this. But if she's Nivla Apostle, so you're writing Itza, so then you don't write Mason, you got to write Mea. Okay, number 9. The ksuva is either the raisa or the rabbanan. According to some rishonim, for a basula, it's the raisa. According to others, it's even the rabbanan for a basula. But nonetheless, we still write the raisa because the money is what the Rosh calls money the raisa, meaning it's more expensive zuzim, 8 times more than classic zuzim. So that's why for the standard practice, for a basula, you write me the raisa. For everyone else, you write me the rabbanan in number 9. Okay? And now, there are two other parts to the ksuva. There's Tosefes ksuva, which is an additional amount that the chassan volunteers. And then there is the nedunya, which is the money the kala is bringing in. So the minig is, ever since the days of Maram Mintz and even earlier, a lot of people were poor then, so they just did a standard ksuva because they didn't want to embarrass the people who weren't wealthy. So they just wrote a standard ksuva. And if you really want to detail how much Rockefeller money this Rockefeller steen is bringing in, so you write a separate document. But the ksuva itself, you have standard. So the standard Ashkenazi convention is to assess the Tosefes ksuva at 100 zakukim kesef, whatever the zakuk is, the big discussion in the poskim what a zakuk is, and the nedunya as 100 kesef too. And for an almana, so we have it. So that's why in charts number 11 and 12, which is the Tosefes ksuva and the nedunya, so we fill in mea for a besula, and chamishim for a non-besula. And then we have sach hakol, so you got to add it up. So if you add the 100 zakukim of the Tosefes and the 100 zakukim of the Nedunya together, so for a besula we get 200, that's why in chart 13, line 13, you fill out sach hakol masayim, and for a almana you fill out the mea. Okay, I wanted to mention just a few other details, the times are very, very, very late. If you look at the number 10, the hanolas lei mibei. What does that mean? We're saying who paid for the nedunya. So the standard case is where the father is marrying off the daughter, so he's giving the nedunya. So you write mibei avuha. If she doesn't have a father, so the father's not alive anymore, so you write mibei nisho. Mibei nosha. It means basically the father is forgotten, meaning the father's not around. Nashani elakim is kalamoli. What about if for an almana and a grusha? So usually then, even though there is a father, but she's more independent, so the father's not really necessarily supplying the nedunya. So in that case, there are two minhagim. One minhag is more standard one, is you write nothing. The anolas lay, so you need a specialized form of a ksuva, because otherwise you're going to have mibay in there. And the practice of the RCA, once again being slightly unconventional here, is there also you write mibay nisha, because even if there's a father, but the father is not relevant.
That's what the father's what?
Not relevant. In other words, if she's an almana, so usually he's not getting involved. The kanina ali for a blaich to discuss, and I just wanted to mention the following brief halachis concerning the edim. I'm not going to go into the reasons, which was my original plan, but we'll just discuss in bullet form what you have to do. And the reasons I can discuss privately, you have it in the Seder Alimud in the Shulchan Aruch that I outlined for you. You're not allowed to have more than one space between the signatures of the Edim and the Ksuva. So that's a psul. So if you could have up, if you don't have to have any blank space, you could have up to one blank space, but no more. And what if the artist blew it, and then you're presented with such a Ksuva, so what do? So ignore the blank lines. Have the Edim, sign closer, that's it. It's not so pretty, so it's not so pretty. And what if you blew it, and you already had the Edim sign lower? So get another eight, and have him sign in Grace Isis, to fill out the space between that and that. That's a psak in Shulchan Aruch in the Simen Memhei, that you could have, you have that eitzah to kasher up the space. Number two, the last line of the ksuva should be at the end of a line. If you're dealing with a computer, you got to make sure to play around, adjust the font, etc. And that most of this is in order to avoid ziyuf, because you want to make sure people don't add extra words. The Eidim lecharchila should sign one underneath each other at the right margin. But what if the artistic suva has it that they're signing side by side? So the Me'ikar Adin, you have to keep in mind the following. If they're signing side by side, then you have to be makbid that there not be a significant margin on the right side, because otherwise people will fill in extra words there. Or you could have your own fake margin, meaning draw lines around it. So that boxes in the ksuva. With a computer, it's easy to do that. And you have to insist that the Eidim sign at the right margin, right? They can't start signing in the middle. Again, all of this is because you might fill in beforehand, right? If here's the ksuva, you got to make sure they start here. They shouldn't start over there. But that's all if you're stuck. The right way to do it is one under the other on the right margin. That's the proper way to do it. You're supposed to read the ksuva in advance. If you're an aide, post can point out, you can get away with just spot checking if it's a standard text. Just make sure that what you filled in is correct. The minig is to sign Ploni ben Ploni aide. If you omitted the word aide, it's kosher, provided you wrote Ploni ben Ploni. And the one final situation is, what if you made a mistake in the ksuva that's significant? So here's what you do. You have the Eidim sign it, and then after the ksuva is finished, you write what you made a mistake on in Hebrew. There are details about this. You could check up the Sfarim for this, but if you don't know it, so you make up your own Hebrew. Yesh Mila Bein Ashuris, whatever the Mila is. And then the Eidim sign again. Okay, that's the convention. It's basically like an initial in secular law. That's the Shtar convention. You correct a mistake, and then you have the Eidim sign, and then you write what you did wrong, and then you have them sign again. Okay, sorry for going so long.
After the
that
second
Megillah. Right underneath.